Our topic for tonight will be archaeology in Alaska, its aims and purposes. First of all, Mr. Vanstone, could you define archaeology for us?
Yes. The job of the archaeologist is to reconstruct humanity from the earliest time to the present. In order to do this, he uses somewhat the same methods as the historian. The historian uses his books and manuscripts, but the archaeologist has to use the materials that he finds in the ground, such as the houses or the pottery or some of the tools that the people used to use. Now, the archaeologist in Alaska has a number of special problems which confront him, and he has special benefits too. First of all, he is lucky to be working in somewhat of a natural laboratory in which he has living people all around him who live in very much the same way that their ancestors did hundreds of years ago. And also, when he comes to dig his archaeological sites, he finds lots more tools and objects that the people use because the preservation is very good. That is, the ground is frozen through most of the year, and it allows for the preservation of bone and antler and skin, things which would ordinarily decay in other areas where the ground is wet part of the time. So the archaeologist in Alaska is able to find out a lot more about the way the people used to live than he would if you were working in an area where preservation wasn't so good.
Well, Mr. Vanstone, the people that visit the museum quite often ask the question where the Eskimos came from. And not only that, but where the Eskimo culture originated. Could you give us a little bit of information on that, perhaps?
Yes, of course, that's one of the things which is bound to interest people the most, and it's also one of the most interesting problems in Eskimo archaeology. All of the work that has been done leads us to believe that the Eskimos came into Alaska across the Bering Straits region from Siberia, and that they also came onto St. Lawrence Island, apparently, too. St. Lawrence Island is right off the coast of Siberia, but it belongs to the United States, and the people seem to have migrated over there. It's only a distance of 30 miles or so, and lived in St. Lawrence Island for a great long period of time. So we're fairly certain that the Eskimo came from Siberia. He's a general mongoloid type, just like most of the American Indians, and he once lived on the Siberian coast, and at some time in the dim past migrated to the American coast and all over Alaska.
Well, is there any evidence at all that people came to the New World from any other place than through Bering Straits?
No, there doesn't seem to be. Of course, that's one question which we can never answer for certain, but it's, as far as is generally known, the only possible method of entrance into the United States, or into the North American continent, rather, is, of course, through the Bering Straits region. There's only a distance of some 30 or 40 miles, and it would be fairly easy for groups of people to cross there. But that seems to be the only place in the whole hemisphere where such an entrance could take place.
Well, that's interesting. I'm sure people will want to know the answer to that question. Perhaps now we better launch into our discussion on archaeology in Alaska, and more specifically, what the University of Alaska has done to contribute to the archaeology of the North. I understand that the first expeditions were carried out as late as the 1920s in Alaska, which isn't very long ago. Could you give us a little information on that?
Yes, the university has been very active in archaeological research in the territory, and back in 1926 and 1927, Mr. Otto William Geist, who I believe was on this program a couple of weeks ago, made an archaeological reconnaissance of St. Lawrence Island. And then again in the early 30s, 1931, 32, and 33, the university with territorial funds carried on excavations there. And then in 1934 and 1935, with an additional grant from the United States government, Mr. Geist again carried on excavations on St. Lawrence Island. In 1936, Mr. Geist and Dr. Froelich Rainey published the results of their work.
Well, could you tell us about the sequence at St. Lawrence Island? Did they find a number of sites, or did they dig just one big site, or what was the situation over there?
Well, one large mound was excavated. That is, a large area which had been occupied for a considerable length of time, the Kukulik Mound, and a number of different Eskimo cultures were identified there. This apparently seems to have been a place where the Eskimos lived for a long time. And the sequence on St. Lawrence Island was extremely clear, with the old cultures, of course, being down the bottom and the more recent ones toward the top.
Well, what was the cultural sequence, and what are the specific names for the different time periods involved?
Well, the earliest level, that is the oldest, the one on the bottom of the site, was called the Old Bering Sea culture, and it seems to date about 2,000 years ago. The Eskimos at that time had a fully developed sea mammal hunting culture, and they did very elaborate curvilinear art decoration on the objects that they used for their hunting, so that you find very finely carved ivory objects in that level. And then at the next level of occupation, seems to be somewhat later. It's called the Punuk period, and seems to date around 1200 AD. And you get there an even further elaboration of sea mammal hunting techniques with sort of a degeneration of the carving. That is, the Eskimo craftsmen were no longer as skilled in this highly decorative curvilinear art style that they had previously. And then the top levels on the Kukulik Mound seem to be fairly recent, dating from around 1700. They show the Eskimo culture pretty much as it is today, and the changes that took place after that time were those that were brought about by the entrance of the American whalers into the area with their trade goods, beads, and iron tools and such things. And then around 1879, the mound seems to have been abandoned because of a severe epidemic on the island.
Is the development of Eskimo culture the same on the Alaska mainland as it is on St. Lawrence Island?
No. Strangely enough, there seems to be an entirely different type of development on the mainland. And the University of Alaska has also carried on archaeological field work on the mainland as well, mostly at Point Hope. Now, the expedition there was under the direction of Dr. Froelich Rainey of the University of Alaska Museum, and then Dr. Helge Larsen, the Danish National Museum, was also there, and Dr. Lewis Giddings, the University of Alaska. And the Aputak village site was quite different from any of the sites on St. Lawrence Island. That is, it wasn't a large midden, a big mound, or anything like that, but it was rather a village site made up of lots of houses. And apparently it was a pretty good-sized village at that, too, because they were able to count some 800 houses, and the indication was that a good many of the houses had been washed off into the sea by the action of the water over the centuries since the village had been abandoned. And the village seemed to have been laid out in avenues, just like a modern city, with streets and all the houses lined up in some sort of irregular pattern, which is also something very different for the Eskimo area. Now, the economy of the people in the Aputak site seems to have been quite different from that of those people who lived on St. Lawrence Island. First of all, you didn't get the strong emphasis on sea mammal hunting that you did on St. Lawrence Island. There was more of an emphasis on the inland aspects of the economy, that is, the hunting of caribou and other land animals.
Well, during historic times, the people at the Aputak village at Point Hope hunted whales a lot, didn't they?
Yes, whale hunting is very important at Point Hope today, but strangely enough, it doesn't seem to have been done very extensively during the Aputak times. You don't find any of the usual characteristics of whale hunting in the sites. That is, you don't find whaling harpoon heads, you don't find great quantities of baleen or materials made of whale bone or baleen in the sites. As a matter of fact, it seems that the Aputak people perhaps only stayed down on the coast at Point Hope part of the year, but spent the fall and winter back in the interior hunting caribou and other land animals. That is, they had sort of a seasonal migration sort of arrangement in which they spent part of the time on the coast and part of the time on the in the interior. And this indicates very well, I think, this rather careful blending of land hunting and sea hunting that you have on the mainland, the sort of thing that couldn't possibly exist on St. Lawrence Island. Now, a number of interesting things occur in the Aputak site that show this development of land hunting. First of all, almost all of the objects found in the houses, instead of being of ivory, like you might expect, and like was the case at St. Lawrence Island, are rather made out of antler, showing how much they depended upon the caribou. And you have a great collection of arrowheads that would be used with the bow and arrow for the hunting of caribou, and a great quantity of very interesting flint arrow points and side blades for knives and arrowheads, which are distinctive and unique as far as other Eskimo sites are concerned. Some of these are very carefully made and very finely chipped, some of the finest flint working techniques in the New World. And that certainly shows us that the Aputak people were not primitive groups, a primitive group by any means.
Well, could you tell us something about when the Aputak people lived and what the date of the village is?
The site seems to be about 1,000 years old.
Well, is there any other remains at Point Hope of the Aputak culture besides the houses that you found?
Yes, they excavated, in addition to the houses, a great number of burials, which showed, of course, a great deal about how the Aputak people lived. Because most primitive peoples, when they bury their dead, they include with the body lots of the tools and things that used to belong to the person, things which he will need in the afterlife. So that some of the things we know about Aputak depend entirely upon what was found in the graves. Now, first of all, we found a great number of rather odd, difficult to identify objects, ivory carvings that were very skillfully made, which seemed to not have any real practical purposes. Some of these took the form of swivels, and others were carved in very intricate chain-like designs, or just in plain rather pretzel-like twisty forms, which have been very difficult to identify. Now, both Larson and Rainey saw in these rather interesting specimens something very similar to a Siberian trait, which was known to be connected with shamanism, that is, the witch doctors who were the people in an Eskimo village who had charge of the supernatural life and who acted as the contact between the common people and the supernatural beings. And these shamans, as they were called, often wore these swivels and these interesting designs on their clothing. And it's very possible that these were included in the burials as some very special possessions of the person associated with the village shaman, or perhaps also included with the bodies of the shamans themselves. And it's interesting that you find these interesting objects almost always in the burials and very seldom in the houses. And another interesting factor that occurred in some of the graves was the placing of little ivory eyes with jet pupils in them in these skulls, so that when you excavated the skeleton, it looked very much as if the body were staring up at you out of these ivory eyes. And also occasionally there was an object across the mouth, sort of a mouth plate, which was made to look like the mouth was sewed up, or plugs in the nose occasionally. And these also seem to have some ceremonial significance. For instance, it might possibly be that the people wished to make their relative look especially attractive to the spirits when he got to the other world. Or perhaps they were afraid of some evil spirit that would enter the body through the body openings, so therefore they closed the mouth and the nose to keep out this evil spirit. But whatever it was, it did result in some of the most interesting and elaborate carving in the whole Aputak site, which shows that the Aputak craftsmen were the equal of those ivory carvers on St. Lawrence Island. One interesting factor, I think, that has survived from Aputak times right up to the present is a legend and story that the people in the Aputak, or in the Point Hope village today, tell their children, and that is that if they don't behave themselves, why, the man with the ivory eyes will get them, which does show, I think, how some traditions can last up through great periods of time in people and still be remembered by the people today.
Well, are there Aputak sites found elsewhere in Alaska?
Yes, Aputak sites are found in a number of different places in Alaska. First of all, there is a site at Deering, which is at north of Seward Peninsula, and sites have also been found on Seward Peninsula at Point Spencer and Teller, and also as far south as Bristol Bay. So it appears as if the Aputak culture generally is fairly widespread over Alaska, and it may turn out to be a very important cultural development on the whole Alaska mainland.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Stone. We'll continue our discussion of Eskimo archaeology the next time.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. This is Jerry Shikora of the College Women's Club. I hope you will join us on Thursday evening when we will again bring you Mr. Van Stone and Mr. Oswalt on our Telefact broadcast. Thank you for listening, and good night.